Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air. Pleased to be with you. It's Wednesday. How are you, Dan?
Jumbo jumbo. I'm doing good. I am in Kenya at the moment on a layover. So if there's any weird noises, if anything weird happens, I blame it on the circumstances, because there's construction outside. Someone was vacuuming in the hallway. So just big disclaimer, you know, sometimes it's tough to have a podcast when you travel a lot.
It is, but you know when you just said, you know, excuse the background noise, of course, because you said Kenya, in my head I'm picturing safari, so I'm thinking we might hear an elephant in the background.
Yeah.
We could hear, like, you know, all these amazing big five, and instead you were like, yeah, it might be the construction or the vacuum. I'm thinking, did he say Kenya or did he say Frankfurt or Gothenburg? I'm not sure.
You know, I think you need to update your impression of Africa, because, I mean, you land.
I love
you
Africa. Don't,
there's not lions walking around at Nairobi Airport.
Hello? Hello? Oh, God, we've lost him. Oh, dear. I think I'll just do the episode by myself, hey? So, let's start with Emirates. Oh, my God. How are we going to do this?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, my God. Okay.
You have to listen to the QuickTime. It is hilarious. You warn about disappearing, and then you're gone. And I literally say, oh my God, we've lost him. Yeah.
I just want to acknowledge that the second, for you guys, it won't be so long, but literally the second when I was like, we were joking about lions on the runways. First of all, I should mention...
No, we didn't even hear that joke, by the way. You were gone well beyond that. You literally started to explain to us why the connection might drop. Bam, he was out of here.
So, for context, I would say the electricity in our hotel has gone about 15 times since we got here an hour ago. And I think that's what connected the Wi-Fi. God. So, I'm on my cell phone data. And by the way, we're at probably the most expensive hotel that's not in the center of Nairobi. We're at Four Points by Sheraton, Nairobi Airport, in a beautiful suite that we got upgraded to. It's $210 for a night here, which is like kind of crazy to me in Kenya. at an airport hotel.
That seems high. I'm glad you said that. I thought you were about to say, like, this is a great deal. I'm thinking, well, really? You know?
No. Yeah. So, yeah, we're getting these issues. But why am I in Kenya? Like, we're going to get to you, Alex, in a second. But this is such a... This is even kind of crazy for me. So, months ago, I booked a ticket from Kenya to the U.S. There was an amazing fare on, British Airways, American Airlines. So it was like $1,500 round trip to Kenya in business. And you can add as many segments as you want in the U.S., which, Alex, as you know, is great when you're trying to go for one world status. So I was like, this is it. I'm getting status in one ticket. So I have the craziest itinerary coming up. But it started in Kenya. I was in Dubai, so I needed to get down here. Flew Emirates Business this morning, bumped into Tim Clark on my way to the lounge, president of Emirates. Very cool to bump into him, although I didn't say anything because he looked busy enough. And now I'm here at this
hotel. Wait. Because when you did bump into Tim Clark, you sent me a video of him walking with his entourage. Was that through the business class lounge?
No, so it was outside. I know it's been years since you were there. So basically, the first class lounge is on one side, business is on the other, but you can also kind of walk at the top. So I saw him coming from the first class lounge. He walked toward the business lounge where I was going. So I walked behind him, and then he actually didn't go into the lounge. I don't know where he was going, but that was
But you didn't stop him, did you?
No, I didn't. And you know what's weird is that airline CEOs are not, they're not celebrities, but kind of like, right. I guess to us in the industry, when we see them, it's like, this is someone we talk about so much. So when you see them in person, it's like, oh, like, what do I do? You know, how do I act normal? I was like, should I say hello? What do I do? Do I just ignore it? Pretend I don't know who he is? Pretty much everyone knew who he is. It was obvious, even most of the passengers who were passing by. So yeah, it was just a very interesting situation. What would you have done, Alex?
I think I mean, I do know Tim Clark, and I assume, even though it's been years since we last sat down together, I assume he still would know or would remember who I was. So I would have said hi, and not least because, of course, it's incredibly timely, isn't it? Because Emirates has been in the news everywhere. Of course, Dubai has been in the news everywhere because of the extreme severe flooding that the UAE has had over the last week that has caused mayhem for a global carrier like Emirates that has just struggled, understandably so, to cope with the severity of the situation. They couldn't have staff travel in. They had tens of thousands of passengers stranded globally. So yeah, I think
I
would have stopped him. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you but would we'll have stopped him because of that? Because that's kind of the reason I didn't stop him.
I would have stopped him because of that. Yeah, I think I would have just... I mean, don't get me wrong. Today wasn't the day of emergency for Emirates and Dubai. Things have calmed down now. So that's why I think I would have judged it as okay. Had I have seen him out and about trying to fix things on day one of the crisis, then I would have stayed clear of that.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the little lounge visit. Of course, we would love to have Tim Clark on the podcast one day, ask him a million questions. But we got on our flight down to Nairobi. We land at 2 p.m. Connection leaves at 10:30 tonight, delayed now until 11:20. But
reason?
Late inbound aircraft. I mean, it's Heathrow. So I just feel like I expect delays whenever I'm flying through there. It's not a huge deal, and I'm even more grateful that we booked this hotel because you realize we're not even staying overnight. We spent all this money to have somewhere to spend the day because...
Oh, wow.
I mean, we have some friends in Nairobi. They're at work, so can't see them. Not staying at Nairobi Airport, I don't even think we would have been allowed in because our flight, you know, wouldn't leave for so many hours and it's separate tickets. Yeah. So we needed somewhere to go, and I'm so grateful to be here. Like, you know the feeling when you could be in a crazy crowded terminal or something, just any like stressful situation, and you're just chilling in like a hotel room, and you know, I'm loving life right now. And then tonight starts the really exhausting journey over to Canada, which is my final destination for the travel summit this weekend where I'll be speaking.
Beautiful. The Maple Leaf. Well, I'm sure they're excited to have you there. Where are you going in Canada? Montreal or Toronto or Vancouver?
Toronto.
Oops. Okay. Yeah. You know, my town is Montreal and I spent a lot of time there, but I have spent a bit of time in Toronto, but I do prefer Montreal. But there are some amazing, I'll send you some food recommendations for Toronto.
Some vegan food recommendations?
Yeah, well, Asian, so they've got an extensive vegan menu, I'm sure.
Thank you. Well, beautiful. I was sending food. You food recommendations because you have been in Thailand, one of my favorite countries during the past week.
Yeah. So I left South Korea on Wednesday last week, Wednesday or Thursday. And remember, we were actually coordinating, weren't we, after we recorded the podcast as to how I was going to get to Thailand.
That was fun.
And there are different options.
That was fun.
I mean, for you, that was fun. Because, I mean, it was quite fun for me as well, but I think it was more fun for you because... We were kind of weighing up, okay, it's been a while since I flew this kind of route. So how, you know, who's best on the route? So you've got Korean, you have Asiana, of course, they're merging eventually, and Thai Airways, along with a whole bunch of low cost ones that I didn't want to consider because the flight is over 6 hours. And it's just, do you know, that surprised everyone that I spoke with. I mean, it even surprised the Thai officials that I was meeting with in Thailand after, when they said, oh, you came from Korea yesterday. How was that? You know, it's nice and easier, just a few hours. I was like, well, define few, because I was airborne for 6.5 hours. And they were, gosh, they were saying we forget how far it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what did we agree on?
Surprised by your hyperbole. That's the shocking thing, you know.
Oh, about what?
Let me check. So... Okay, I believe you that the flight could have been around 6 hours, but...
It was 6 hours, 20 minutes.
So also the thing is that flying from Bangkok to Seoul, I think that's why many people are confused, because that's like 4.5 hours. So
it's a huge
difference.
Yeah, yeah. 6:20. I mean, okay, maybe because flight radar starts recording some ground time taxiing and so on. Maybe we were airborne for just a little over six. But they did make an announcement saying that we were going to be avoiding weather. So maybe that slowed us down a little bit, but it did result in lovely, smooth flying the whole way. Mm. So we settled on Thai Airways, right? You and I were speaking that I should go with Thai Airways, and they have multiple flights a day from Seoul to Bangkok. Of course, I chose the A350 operated flight because the flight after me, funny enough, Expert Flyer was showing it as a 777. But when I was boarding, I saw the flight come in and park at the gate next to me. It was another A350. Yeah. So that had a swap.
So you could have slept in, but you thought,
basically. I think
777 shutter.
The flight was only about 50. The other flight was only 50 minutes later. So it's still early morning. It was no difference. So I flew on Thai Airways A350 to Bangkok, which was firstly really nostalgic. It was great to be on Thai Airways A350 again, because this is an aircraft that I delivered with Airbus and Thai Airways back in 2016.
Wow.
2016? Yeah. Yeah, 2016, 8 years ago. At the end of August, we had delivered the first ever A350 to Thai Airways. They were one of the first A350 operators, of course, back then, taking delivery of an A350-900. So this is actually my first time flying on the Thai A350 again since the delivery. So I was really looking forward to getting back on this aircraft that I was very familiar with. It has a beautifully designed interior in terms of the color palette. It's those fuchsia, purple, pink kind of Thai colors, the colors you associate with Thailand. And the staff were absolutely, I mean, full of personality and welcoming. And it was exactly how I had remembered my previous Thai flights. So I was really pleased on that sense, because the airline is going through financial difficulty. It's currently under bankruptcy protection. It's undergoing a restructuring. They have a whole bunch of grounded aircraft. So I was thinking, oh God, this is going to translate into something a bit, you know. But I was really pleasantly surprised. Now I'm trying to find the text, Dan, that I sent you. What did I send you when I was airborne? Because who knew Thai Airways A350 had the fastest Wi-Fi I have experienced on a commercial airline jet. If I say to you, it was more reliable than the Wi-Fi I have here at home, than the Wi-Fi you get in 5-star hotels, certainly more than the Wi-Fi you're in now. But I mean, it was really, really phenomenally impressive. the type that even when I wasn't on my phone and I was chilling, you know, my notifications are pushing through more reliable than they would if I was with 5G on the ground, you know?
Wow. Wow.
That's just so unexpected. It's an airline with practically no money, you know?
That's amazing. I mean, there's some things that Tide does really well. I also like that they have some signature touches, like you actually get an orchid at your seat, or you... I mean, I told you to have the butterfly pea juice, which...
Hold on. I didn't get an orchid at my seat.
Really?
Yeah.
Not with your meal or something?
No. What? Okay, well... What is this?
Well, maybe you didn't get the Royal Orchid Service card.
They said it was a Royal Orchid Service. They said it in the announcement. But where was my orchid? I didn't
where
know that you get an orchid.
Royal Orchid?
Now I'm feeling I didn't fly Royal Orchid. Yeah. You know what? I take back what I said.
You just flew
seriously
normal
this airline.
Orchid.
Whoa. Okay. What else didn't I get?
No, I don't know. But I did tell you, you have to try the butterfly pea juice, which, guys, if you're flying Thai, I mean, I love sweet drinks. So this is a delicious, it's similar to lemon mint, which is another favorite of mine, like sour, sweet. But you said you took one sip and you were like, ooh, this is too much.
Yeah, you know what I'm like with. I'm not so adventurous with drinks. I'm quite happy with just room temperature still water or cranberry. And that's kind of as far as it goes. Yeah, I tried it because you told me to. I mean, okay, I found the text messages I sent you in flight. I put to you, okay, here are my thoughts. I put minimal announcements, meaning it's super peaceful and quiet. Crew are a dream, so warm and engaging, full of personality. I put menu awful, won't be eating a thing, but I have breakfast takeaway from the Four Seasons in my bag, so all good. And then I put to you Wi-Fi fast. And then I put underneath lots of, and this is very true, lots of wear and tear in the cabin. Actually, the cabin looked old and knackered because of the wear and tear. And it goes to show you that even though you can take relatively new aircraft, if there is not a strong, you know, upkeep program for when the aircraft is undergoing either light maintenance or whatever, if the airline is not actively investing in maintaining the quality of the product, boy does it start to deteriorate fast. And it looked like it has. I mean, I had photos that I was sending you of rips and tears and scratches and, you know, everything, you name it, to the point that one of the guys I was traveling with said to me, he was like, are you sure this is a new aircraft? I said, well, it's just 4 years old. This exact model is 4 years old, but this is the A350. He said, why do I feel it's old? And he's pointing at the interior. And I said, because it's all scuffed and it's all marked. And they haven't.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that's funny. You'll like this, right? So the flight was super peaceful and I can't fault it. And okay, I didn't eat because the menu looked horrendous, but that was it. When we were about 4 hours in, I went to the bathroom and they didn't say that the forward lavatory next to the flight deck was inoperative, but they just said that, I mean, it just showed
you
the green icon as vacant. Right. So walked into the galley, and the moment I did, and she saw I was gesturing to the toilet, she was like, oh my dear, this way. She said, look, gesturing me to go to the second galley by doors two. So I said, oh, okay. I said to her, oh, are you sure? Because it says it's vacant. She was like, yes. And then I kind of like caught a glimpse at the door and there was like plastic tape all over the door and whatever. So for whatever reason, they weren't able to lock it from the outside. Fine, so it's in-op. So one of the crew, really sweet, she was talking with me. She was kind of fascinated as to why we were on this intra-Asia flight. And I don't know, I think she just wanted to learn more. While she was taking me into the second galley, she stopped another passenger. So a passenger came from economy behind, which I think they're able to use those bathrooms or those lavatories in the second door area on Thai. But she kind of stopped. She stopped her. And I said, no, let her. Because she was like an older lady and, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Go in front of me. And she was like, no. And then she was telling the a lady, she was like, you know, gesturing her hands in the prayer way as they do in the Thai way. And she was, you know, being really polite, but telling her no. I said, no, I insist, please. I insist. And then the lady, bless her, just turned around and started walking back. Okay, so she opened the door for me and I went into the lab. So, finish, and then I go to wash my hands. There's no sink.
Oh.
Or rather, yeah, there is a sink, there's no tap.
Yeah.
There's no tap. The actual faucet thing is gone, right?
So, the faucet thing, yeah.
Yeah, I always get scared of that word, like UK or US faucet pronunciation. Yeah. So, it's gone, right? There's just like a hole where it should have been, where a tap should have been. So I was like, oh dear. So I thought maybe that's sanitizer, but it wasn't. It was a bottle of soap. So I opened the lab door and she was still standing there and I said to her, is there anywhere I can wash my hands? I mean, of course, I know the A350 inside out, but the way I asked it is as if there's going to be, it's like, oh, yeah, come with me to this back room where we've got the state-of-the-art bathrooms. What I mean is, you know, is there another lab? She was like, oh, no, I'm ready. She was ready, standing with a open bottle of Evian. And she was like, please. And she gestured to the sink. And I said to her, are you sure? And she said, yes, why not? She said to me, why not? I said, okay. So I put my hands in the sink and she started pouring water over my hands while I was washing my hands and used the soap, washing me a bit more. Thorough.
That is done. The Royal Orchid service.
So the lesson we learned here is Alex indeed was on a Royal Orchid flight with Thai Airways International. Bless her. Sweet. She said to me, oh, you know, she said, I said, oh, how long has it been like this? She said, oh, a long time. She said, you know, they're really expensive car. She said, they're really expensive. Yeah, she said. And I said, oh, I know. I said, everything on a commercial aircraft is expensive. I said, you'd be surprised even how much a tray table costs. It's a fortune. Everything is a fortune.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, so we just make the best of situation, you know, until they can have money again. And then she said, and she knew that I was in aviation, but she said, you should tell Airbus to give us one. She said, like, you should tell Airbus to give us one. So. I said to her, I'll send him a text. Yeah. See what we can do. And and then arrived in Thailand, one of your favorite countries. I love Thailand and had a great time. It was brilliant.
So, okay, is it one of your, like, what did you
feel? Yes, one of my favorite countries in Asia. I love it. I feel like it's got this Asian New York buzz to it. Bangkok, yeah. I mean.
You need to.
Full of energy. It's super, you know, crazy, but I like that. And I just really enjoyed my time there. Now, I remembered why I enjoyed it so much when I was last there in 2017 or whatever. And yeah, it was just, and you were very helpful, of course, with your recommendations for food. Because immediately when I landed, I wanted a nice, decent lunch place to have a decent pad thai. And you delivered the goods because I was staying at the Kempinski, which is the hotel, the Siam Paragon one. So Kempinski and the Siam, which is beautiful. And you told me where to have lunch, which was right there. And so that was perfect when you are hungry and tired and had been awake since 4 a.m. Korea time.
Yeah. So if you're listening, you're wondering what was the place. So Siam Paragon is like the most famous classic mall in Bangkok. And there's a great food court there. One place doesn't have vegetarian options. But for Alex, I told him go to Thip Samai, Thipsamai. It's an iconic pad thai place. They have their original location has a much bigger menu with some even vegan options, all types of different options. So
yeah,
that's a great place to go. Highly recommend. I realized
your message came at the right time. I was so hungry.
Amazing. So I just realized I sent you a photo now. Back in the day, I don't know if they brought back the orchids since COVID, but maybe I was like gaslighting myself because I have flown them on 3 business class flights since COVID, but it was such a lovely touch back in the day. Don't remember. I guess they don't do it anymore for whatever reason, cost cutting, but it was just so nice. Like when you boarded, there was always an orchid at your seat. So yeah, please let us know, you guys.
One of the listeners will know. Also, can we just say, it's a bit of a stretch to tell me that there was going to be an orchid at my seat. Do you know what I imagined in my head? I imagined a full on orchid plant, right? That's what I was like, what? You're talking about a petal from a
flower.
An orchid.
It's a flower. It's okay, like a well,
it looks
rose,
very two-dimensional in the picture you've sent me.
Yeah, no, wow, I wonder why it's two-dimensional, because it's in a photo. So.
Speaking of two-dimensional, you said to me today that it was weird seeing Tim Clark in Dubai because you're so used to seeing him two-dimensional.
So here, guys, I mean, if you've ever seen anyone, like if you guys ever bump into us listening, it's also like, whoa, like putting the... because. You don't
well,
understand
well, because
how
you
tall
are
or short
ridiculously
someone is.
Tall. Yeah. Dan is very, very tall. I urge you to not even bother to approach, because I walk around in life feeling quite tall. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of tall. And then I stand next to him and it's just demoralizing. Yeah.
So I'm mentally preparing in Toronto this weekend for the number one thing. For everyone says, wow, you're so tall. And then I just go, like, what do you respond to that? You know, I'm just like,
yeah,
thank you. So, yeah, but it's going to be fun to meet hopefully some of you guys listening, and hopefully have some good flights on the way there. So this week
I've just Googled, I'm on Reddit. Oh. What are your best responses to, wow, you're tall? So these are
okay. That was quick.
I mean, don't say that you don't get everything on this podcast. Seriously. So, option one of your response, you can say, thanks, I grow in my spare time.
Okay.
Second one is, I am. When did that happen? Okay. Someone's put, use a variation of, I'll let you in on a secret. Most tall people know they are tall. You don't have to tell them. Oh, that's passive aggressive.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
like that.
Passive aggressive.
Oh, you can say, I used to love milk. That's quite
I
good.
I used to love milk. Okay. Almond milk.
Almond milk. Okay. Someone says that he says that I always say, it's not me who's tall, I'm just normal height. You're short. Okay, that's also aggressive. God, yeah. Tall people are aggressive.
I'll just
goodness
stick to
me,
thank
what is this
you.
Reddit like, thread?
Or no, I'll just stick to I know or things.
Someone said they reply, steroids.
Oh, okay, you know what I usually say? I just say, yeah, I know, you can't really tell on camera. That's my like go-to response. And
because everyone knows him from TV and video,
you know,
YouTube. Okay.
Just before we get into the news, which we will get to Emirates, because
yes,
on my flight down today, in Emirates Business, I don't know, I think she was like, I would guess maybe Czech or something.
Okay.
She goes to me and Oscar, oh, when the cabin supervisor told me you're vegan, I couldn't believe it. And we're just like, okay, so we're like, why? She's like, oh, you just don't look vegan. So then she starts digging her own grave. I mean, she was so nice and sweet, but then we're like, so what does a vegan look like? She's like, that's literally what we said. She's like, well, you know, skinny. And I'm waiting for her to go like bun, pink hair, like all this stuff.
Namaste.
So, yeah, I think she meant it as a compliment, as in she's like, yeah, you know, you guys, you have muscles.
You look,
how do you get muscles
you look
as a vegan?
Nourished.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
so we're
fed.
Like, we're like,
are you not starving?
Honey, it's 2024. Let's get up to date. So that was one of those funny things. So speaking of Emirates.
Yeah, let's go into what happened over the last week and then also this apology.
So this is obviously coming out on Wednesday. On Tuesday last week, there was a crazy storm in Dubai. I happened to be there for it. It was, in the morning, it was like just extremely low visibility, rainy, cloudy, whatever. It was like, okay, crazy storm. There was some flooding. Then that sort of cleared up and flights were starting to move again. Things were getting back to normal. Clouds are sort of coming and going, and all of a sudden the sky turns green, like not slightly green, fully dark green, like the apocalypse. And the rain starts pouring. There was, I would say, like thunder every 5 seconds for hours, just like poof, poof, poof. So yeah, it was actually completely insane. We looked outside, there were cars with water covering the, okay, I don't know the expression in English, but where the engine is on most cars in front, up above that. So it was just like the windows and the
roof.
You mean
the bonnet?
The bonnet. Is that what it's called? The hood. Yeah. The hood, I would say. Now I found the word. Yeah. Isn't that the hood?
Yeah, the front is the, no, the car bonnet. I mean, no, maybe in American it's the hood, but the car bonnet. Yeah.
In America it's the hood. So anyway, yeah, literally up to the side. So then I'm wondering, what's going on at the airport? So, of course, the whole day I'm on flight radar checking out what's going on. And interestingly, some flights are still coming and going. And I'm wondering, how is this possible when the water is this deep? Most of the places I look outside. So fast forward. Okay. I don't know what order we do this, but just, I want to reference what I'm saying now. Fast forward. Tim Clark publishes an apology to passengers about all the disruptions, which we will describe in a second. But in it, he says the reason the flights were so delayed was that staff couldn't get to the airport, which, yes, that's certainly the case on like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But on Tuesday, I was like, are you sure that's the reason they're delayed? Because if I look outside, there's definitely a very noticeable other reason that the flights are delayed and diverting. So it was just a crazy week of disruptions. And it was interesting, to see how... So Dubai Airport has three terminals, but... So there's one for Fly Dubai and the ultra, ultra, either exotic ones like different airlines from Afghanistan or Yemen. There's Terminal 1, which has all airlines besides that and besides Emirates, United, and Air Canada. So Emirates, United, and Air Canada have their own terminal. But what was so interesting was seeing how like different airlines were affected in waves. So at some points... only Emirates flights would be super disrupted, let's say on Thursday, and partner flights would be on time. Suddenly on Thursday evening, partner flights left and right, no, not partner, I mean other airlines, suddenly left and right, they're diverting to Muscat, to Abu Dhabi, to Doha. It's like Cathay Pacific, Air China, Lufthansa, Swiss, they're all diverting while Emirates is coming into land. So it was like this super weird inconsistency that we saw, I guess just them trying to desperately figure out how do we work with our extremely limited capacity that we're at. So Alex, you know, if you want to talk more about specifically what Emirates was going through and what they were doing to try to sort things out, we can.
So it was chaos, wasn't it? I mean, and anyone who has got Twitter or Insta or whatever can see this footage of tens of thousands of passengers stranded. You had families and children and elderly sleeping on the floor. You had dozens of flights cancelled every 30 minutes. You had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flights building up a backlog, which went on from day one to day two to day three to day four. Emirates quite literally had to suspend operations for passengers beginning their journey in Dubai and said, do not travel to the airport, because they couldn't cope with the sheer volume of transit passengers that were stuck inside, that the last thing they needed is all the holidaymakers and those that live in Dubai and so on also turning up expecting to fly on their pre-booked flight as normal. And it was chaos. I spoke to a couple of airline executives who operate flights to Dubai, and they were saying this is horrendous. They weren't even able to grasp or to understand exact information as to how they were even going to get out of this mess. At some points, one airline CEO, on the condition of staying anonymous, said to me that he, at that moment, could not figure out how their aircraft was going to get out, how they were going to be in touch with their flight crew and their cabin crew, who also had no idea as to, do they go to a hotel? But hotels are impossible to get into because it was so chaotic.
Yeah, let alone people, getting to the hotels.
Well, let alone getting there, because everything was flooded to such an extent that, I mean, it was just Dubai became, the roads were rivers, and that's, you just couldn't move anywhere. I was seeing on Twitter, I don't know how this random kind of tweet came up in front of me, and she had like no followers, you know, the photo is an egg, bless her, like it's not a proper account. She was like, my husband has no phone. and was traveling for the first time in years and years, and he's in his late 70s, and I have not been able to get in contact with him, and his transit time was exactly when everything kicked off. She was begging Emirates on Twitter, please, can somebody help me locate my husband? And I just thought,
as if that's what they have time
for
in all that
horrible
chaos.
Of course they haven't got time, they're not even seeing her tweet, but also like, oh my God, every person will have a story. And that's, you know, then you had videos of aggressive Brits screaming at the Emirates staff, come out behind those counters, you lazy, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking, this is ridiculous, honestly. That's what they do in, you know, in places like to Benidorm cities when there's disruption, but you don't expect to see it in other places. But maybe Dubai is becoming a bit like that. I don't know. Yeah. Story for another day. But the level of disruption, tensions were high, understandably so. People were asleep on the floor. You know, it was just some people were asleep on the floor for three nights straight.
Yeah. Which, okay, this is the takeaway. I know that everyone listening to this podcast is already a somewhat familiar traveler. That's why they listen to this stuff. So
yeah,
you know what to do. But of course, in that situation, you don't just sit around and wait for something to happen.
No.
First of all,
no.
If you can, of course, I realize that people are coming from countries where they cannot enter the UAE visa free.
Well, that's the other thing. And this, please stress the importance of this. This amazed everyone I'd spoken with. When people were, you know, why don't they just leave? It just explained how that's not possible for a lot.
Yeah, so in most countries, transit passengers do not need a visa to transfer. There are a few exceptions like the US, but in many countries you can transfer without a visa. But let's say you come from India or the Philippines or Bangladesh or many places in Africa, you cannot travel to the UAE or many countries, unfortunately, without getting a visa. So it doesn't matter what the weather disruption is, if your flight is canceled, you could end up being stuck in the airport for days because you can't enter the country. You also obviously can't go to an embassy to apply for a visa. So you're stuck. And that's the really unfortunate situation. But I will say, I did see a lot of Europeans, Australians, you know, people from the West who can enter the UAE easily, visa free. Who chose not to, which I also understand for budgetary reasons, whatever. But if you are in the position to do that, so I know that if you and I were in that situation, we were stranded during transit, actually what I'm forgetting here is that there weren't even any taxis to get from the airport.
No, you're saying it as if the issue is only in the terminal, when of course the issue is actually outside the terminal. The terminal itself is the secondary impact. And of course the other thing is, yes, let's say you and I are in that scenario and we've got, I've got a British passport, you've got a US passport. So in that way, we're blessed enough to be able to go to places without needing a visa in many circumstances. So we say, right, we're not going to be caught up in this chaos. We're going to leave. Number one, when you exit that terminal door, you're literally looking at water. You're looking at rivers rather than roads. So how are you leaving? Number two, what if we had checked in bags? What about all these? There were so many people who were screaming about their bags.
Yeah.
And for an airline in that scenario, they're trying to clear the sheer number of people. The bags become a whole afterthought that then they start dealing with days and days later. And then you've got passengers who say they accidentally put medication in their checked bag, and now that checked bag was nowhere to be seen. You had bags that were some bags were underwater because they were in the luggage containers that were on the apron or the taxiways and so on at the time when everything started to flood, and they were scrambling to get them out and so on and so on. I just think there wouldn't have been a right way to cope with this. It looked like the definition of a nightmare. And that's what, I mean, there were people in my hotel, Dan, in both South Korea and in Thailand that I would see every day sitting with their bags at the concierge desk while the concierge tried to figure out how they get out of there, because they were, each of them in both Korea and Thailand were Emirates passengers. And I was overhearing the conversation as I was kind of waiting to speak with the concierge about something. And they were like, I just, you know, both of them were American and both couldn't believe One of them was specifically saying like, oh, this is just my luck. You know, it doesn't even rain over there.
Yeah, which is true.
And they just couldn't believe that they were, you know, caught up in that.
Just one quick piece of context. We're going to talk about what we would do in this scenario, but Dubai International Airport is not only by a small margin, they are by far the busiest international airport in the world these days. Last month, the difference to the second busiest airport was
huge,
like 20% or 15% in terms of capacity. Yeah. You can have tens of thousands of passengers arriving in an hour. So it's truly just an impossible situation for the airline, for the airport, for everyone to handle when something like this happens. And unfortunately, with climate change and everything, these kind of occurrences will likely be more frequent. So I think it's interesting to discuss, if we had been transiting in Dubai, what would we have done? Let's say you were in economy, Alex, flying, doesn't matter where, but what would you have done in that situation? You get to Dubai, it's chaos. Tell us.
Well, I think the difficult part of that is the bit that, you know, that how do you then move from the terminal? So I think first things first, I would have tried to have taken myself out of the situation, if possible, and abandoned the idea that, you know, somehow my connecting flight was going to go ahead when you can see the situation in front of you, and then enter. So I would have entered the country. But then it would have been the scenario as to how do you safely move from the terminal when the whole city, including the ramp up to the terminal itself, is flooded. And that would have become the next mission. And then hopefully would have been able to navigate that, be it through maybe the underground metro or, you know, scenarios like that. I remember when Qatar flooded last October after a storm just caused havoc, because this is what happens when you kind of get like a once a year storm. But this wasn't a once a year storm in Dubai. This was a once in 75 year storm. They had never had so much rainfall in 75 years as they had in the space of hours with this saga. But I remember when they had it on a much smaller scale, but it still caused chaos in Qatar last October, the metro was functioning perfectly because it was all underground. And so that was one way to move around. Meanwhile, the roads were flooding quickly. So yeah, the challenge would have just switched, Dan, and into figuring out how to move to a hotel and to try to let this all calm down. And then, of course, I wouldn't have even attempted to call the call center. What would have been the point of that? You know, it's all you hear. You wouldn't have been able to get through to someone. Had I absolutely like
Tim
needed
Clark,
to,
Habibi, Tim Clark, hey.
Yes, no, wouldn't have tried that either. I think I would have. Many people use this strategy, and I also do it. Many people were able to connect to Emirates when they called a totally random country Emirates office customer service, and that worked well. People were saying they were calling Kazakhstan and Tajikistan Emirates office, and they were getting through in a minute, and they were having an agent who had the authority to make appropriate changes. But also, some of these agents had not been briefed yet by Dubai about what the flood policies were going to be, how you were going to be rebooked for free, how if there was going to be compensation. So many were paying thousands. I saw so many examples of people paying thousands to change their flights, which shouldn't have been the case, because hello, it's not their fault. They're not waking up and deciding to fly 3 days later. So it would have been difficult. I would have felt comforted if I had my AirTag in my luggage.
Yeah.
Okay. As to where my bag was, knowing, you know, that there's chaos. And yeah. And I assume your strategy would have been similar.
So, okay. First of all, reason to have travel insurance number 1081.
But 1081.
Yeah. So the thing is, some people waited for taxis for like 8 hours. And I know on Tuesday, the storm was so bad that the metro wasn't really operating, because
you
get to the metro stop where you're going and then the water is up to your waist. So what are you supposed to do?
It's scary.
Yeah. So in that situation, if I was connecting, I would have probably thought, okay, if I, first of all, go to Twitter, that's the place. Although, just go to Twitter to find live updates, see what people are saying, search for, Dubai Airport Taxi, see what people are saying about that. Search for, of course, go on Flight Radar, see how things are looking.
But before you move on, can we stress how important that is about Twitter and X? Like, if you don't agree with Elon Musk, if you think Twitter is whatever, I can't tell you how it is basically the first move of any major airline or company or whatever. When they need to speak, that's where they speak. So if you're not on there, you're not going to see it. So please join, even if you don't follow anyone. Just join for these scenarios. Okay, continue.
Yeah, and not only that, to see what other people are saying live, because Reddit is a place to see what other people are saying, for example, but it's difficult to find live updates. So this is so valuable. So if I had seen, people have been waiting. If I had even seen a photo of the taxi line, seen photos or videos of the city, I would be like, I'm probably not leaving. So in this case, what's the best course of action? I'm staying in the airport. Of course, check every transit hotel. There are airside hotels. There's also sleeping pods. I would check those. Of course, they would be full. So then next, I would check, can I upgrade my next flight? Even if I just upgrade to business, at least I can go to the lounge, which has sort of recliner chairs I can rest on. It has free food. It has showers. If I was in business, I would check, can I upgrade to first? Because listen, this is a situation where you don't know how bad it's going to be, but it would definitely, you could be looking back 3 days later and say, wow, was that worth the $500 upgrade?
Dan's like, if he's going down in a flood, or if he's going to flood, he's going to flood in the first class lounge.
I'm flooding with a free massage every 24 hours. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's probably what I would try to do, because also, if that wasn't an option, I probably wouldn't stay airside. If I had an option to go landside, just to see like what can I do? Because there's actually
quite a few hotels. I would have been in a difficult situation there, because they were actively not allowing anyone from landside to then re-enter. And that went on for at least a couple of days. I think even a few days.
Exactly.
While they tried to clear airside. So if you, I guess all of this depends on, you know, if we're in that situation, how desperately do we need to get to the destination? That's what it boils down to. Because if there was, you know, if it was desperate, I can't see how I would be agreeing with you that, oh, let's just take ourselves out of airside and hope that we get back into departures one day soon.
You know? But I think for most people, if it truly comes down to it, it's not desperate. Like even a business meeting, like unless your child is being born somewhere or whatever it is, you can postpone it or delay it, worst case scenario, in an extreme situation like this. Everyone around the world had heard about what's going on in Dubai. And I'm going to get to is there are quite a number of hotels that you could walk to in Dubai close to the airport. You could be walking through deep water, but hey, you're going to get to a dry hotel room where you can wait things out. So I think that's what I would do personally. Then it's up to everyone else to decide, you know, what they want to do. But that brings
it's interesting insight, isn't it, for listeners to at least figure out how our minds may have been working in that scenario.
Yeah. And that brings us to Tim Clark's quote-unquote apology note, which...
Yeah.
Do you want to read it, Alex?
Well, look, I'm not going to read it all. It is there for anyone to just check. Just type in Emirates Tim Clark apology. But basically, after a few days of chaos, he released a public statement addressed to all our valued customers, he said, and he started it by saying, "This week has been one of the toughest for Emirates operationally as record storms hit the United Arab Emirates, and he wants to offer his most sincere apologies to every customer who has had their travel plans disrupted during this time." What followed then was a kind of play-by-play, hour-by-hour rundown as to what happened. He begins by saying that on Tuesday, the 16th of April, the UAE experienced its highest rainfall in 75 years. Lashing storm winds and rain disrupted activity across the cities, and our 24/7 hub in Dubai remained open, but with flight movements reduced for safety. And then he gradually paints a picture of how things got worse and worse and worse, but that passengers were kept a priority. And then he kind of talks about what was happening behind the scenes. This was perhaps the most compelling part of it, which is that he said, quote, "We know our response has been far from perfect. We acknowledge and understand the frustration of our customers due to the congestion, the lack of information, and confusion in the terminals. We acknowledge that the long queues and wait times have been unacceptable. We take our commitment to our customers very seriously, and we will take learnings from the last few days to make sure that we improve our processes and so on and so on. Okay. I like the fact that he acknowledged that it's been far from perfect. I like the fact that he said the... Do you know what stood out to me? I thought it was quite brave for an airline CEO to admit the obvious about confusion. There are so many airline leaders that would be actively, apprehensive of admitting that there was confused chaos in the terminal. And I like the fact he used the word confusion because it was, you know, that's all. You saw these innocent people caught up in confused chaos. It wasn't just, you know, I don't love when airlines say, you know, we understand the frustration. It's like that does nothing for me as a consumer. You understanding my frustration is like, great. So what? I speak English, you speak English, and you understood that I was frustrated. What have we achieved there? Nothing. Yeah. But if you are going to tell me that you understand that I was absolutely confused, that there was a lack of information and all of that, which he did cite there, then I respect that.
And also just the fact
that he put it in.
Dubai has not seen this type of rain since aviation arrived in the country. So,
of course,
even the airline is confused. Like, that's natural. So, yeah, it's nice to see him admit it. We all understand it. But I feel like so many airlines are like, we have everything under control, when you know they don't. Like, even during a normal strike.
And also, I don't want a long list. When there's been chaos, I don't want a long list of everything you believe you've done. You know, everything. We did this and we did that. And it's like, you want a round of applause or you want to admit it was a shit show when it was a shit show? Okay, so that's what went down in the United Arab Emirates with Emirates, the airline, over the last week. But with that, let's move on to a couple of shorter news stories that caught our eye this week that we wanted you guys to be aware
firstly,
of.
Firstly, little, it was very American, but you know, the listeners love when your American accent comes out. It's like number one.
I do the podcast with you.
There's
no American accent. I keep seeing Piers Morgan correct people for their spelling on Twitter when they're insulting him, and he says, someone replied to him saying, you know, you can't tell an American how to speak. Those days are over. And Piers Morgan replied, you know, saying, you literally speak English. Okay. You know, your language is not American, although these days I believe it is. But anyway, the little Greek airline that could, Aegean, who play it incredibly safe. And we've spoken about this on the podcast before. They are quite a nice airline to fly with in Europe. They are one of Europe's better airlines, a Star Alliance carrier, incredibly popular with the Americans who are connecting on from their United flights, trying to reach Mykonos and Santorini and so on every summer. So have a bunch of... they're just not adventurous enough for my liking. I mean, they're very financially sound. They're profitable. And I'm always thinking, do something. You know, like... Yeah. You know, like you know, go mid-haul, go long-haul, invest in decent product. Well, it seems finally that they've listened to me. they will be investing very modestly in 4 A321neos. I will find out if these are actually A321 LRs, because of course the LRs are actually belonging to the Neo family. And they will be configuring the aircraft with some lie-flat business class seats and, I believe, an updated economy class experience, which is pleasant news for an airline that absolutely has the means to do it but just has not, because they continue to play it safe. What do you think we're going to see? Something decent? Do you think we're going to get 1-1 in business and new economy class seats with decent recline and so on? How brave do you think this is going to be from Aegean?
I think it's going to be in line with what's typical for them and not be very... extreme. Adventurous. So I think they'll go, I'm feeling 2-2, kind of the normal, you know, Gulf Air style, Qatar Airways A320 style seats. Unfortunately, that's, I hope I'm proved wrong, but I don't know. And then in economy, the interesting thing will be in-flight entertainment. Will they have it, or will it be streaming? You know, if you're going to have live flight seats
don't
in
have
business,
it now.
Yeah, if you're going to have live flight seats in business, it's nice to have something in economy, but please. What do you think about business?
Yeah. Well, I hope that they, as I say, I hope that they're a bit more adventurous with this, and they should be, because they need to leverage the fact that Greece is an incredibly popular destination globally, especially in the summer. It's also where I'm from. And they are able to facilitate an immense number of connections, incredibly efficiently, through that Athens Airport hub. Athens Airport as a hub performed as the most efficient hub during the chaos of summer 2022, where every hub just had a meltdown and nobody got their luggage. And it was the, you know, the COVID bounce back where everything fell apart. So I think that with the solid foundations that they have, there really is room for something prosperous here. Will they be brave enough? I'm not sure. How about we send them an email and then we get back to you guys on it?
Let's have reverse herringbone seats, Aegean, please.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be amazing. Also, what caught our eye is, and I guess this links with what you're doing tonight, and I'll ask you more about that now, is that British Airways have confirmed that their 787 is going to get the club suite. Now, I'm kind of impressed in a modest way as to how BA are committing to the club suite rollout, because what's so common, so many airlines, we know, you know, new cabin product, it's linked with a new aircraft only, and most airlines are not bothering to do the refit, especially in this region. However, BA seem to be committing. We know that the club suite is coming to the A380. We know that it's already on most of the 777s. It's on all of the 777s.
All the 200s.
Right, okay.
It's on all the 200s.
They're still doing it on the 777-300. Yeah. And then, of course, on the 350, which is great. So good news that they've managed to get to grips with the fact that it will be on the 787 as well, because their 787s fly to a whole bunch of different destinations. And I really hope they return it to European routes this summer. Can they be a bit more brave as well? I mean, I just don't think they've got the capacity, because they have ended their relationship with the wet lease agreement with Finnair.
Oh, this was bad news for you.
Oh, this was bad. You're right. So, and that's because I thought, good, okay? The Finnair agreement has finished, because I like Finnair, but not the ones that they sent to BA, not those three or four, because they sent them, you know, the older ones, and that it just didn't feel like Finnair at all. And the cabin was kind of tatty and old, and the fabric was torn. And anyway, and their lockers had big red X's over them that they couldn't be used, and some of the toilets were in op, and so on and so on. So it wasn't the best. So when I saw that the convoy of Finnair aircraft were making their way back to Helsinki at the end of March, as British Airways no longer needed the service of Finnair in those examples, I thought, okay, cool, good. Now BA flights will be operated by BA. Well, boy, was I wrong. Because in comes, I don't even know that, what's the name? I've forgotten.
Danish Air Transport.
In DAT. Comes Danish Air Transport, a.k.a. DAT. Okay?
You can't get away from the Nordics.
No. I will be avoiding DAT. Okay, now interpret that as you will, right? Because why have they now commissioned this shady, sketchy Nordic airline? Bring back Finnair. Seriously, they're your one world partner. You've got a whole different business relationships with them. But no, DAT, who I had to Google, and of course they're from your neck of the woods, which is why they sound completely shady. You do know about them.
Of course. I mean, I always see them at Copenhagen Airport. They also, some airlines, I think Air Arabia, for example, in Sharjah, leases some DAT A320s as well.
Well, I read the reviews, okay? And after 2 minutes, I concluded, I'm not going on DAT. And and of course, as well, British Airways have already started to fly them to the key destinations that I fly to on BA.
Malaga. So
that
was,
seriously. Yeah. Anyway, at least BA, listen, if you are in a scenario where you have booked British Airways and you don't want to fly, because you booked British Airways, not for any other reason, you don't want to fly with the airline that they are using as a wet lease, which is now Danish Air Transport, DAT, D-A-T, then luckily BA do have a policy where you can contact them and they can rebook you free of charge onto a service that is actually operated by British Airways. Because guess what? You booked British Airways. You didn't book DAT.
That's great. Yeah, and that's why we got in. Okay, actually, before I give context, check what I just sent you on WhatsApp. Two things. Firstly, so guys, I'm currently tracking a flight from Greece to Paris on DAT in an Air Arabia livery operating for God knows what airline this is. What is airline code TO? TO3619. What is this, guys?
Let's have a look. Transavia France.
Okay, okay.
It is. Wow. Let me check. I'm sure. You said T.
TO is the airline code. Here we go.
TV. Yes. Transavia.
Okay, so Transavia France.
TO/TVF.
Flying around Air Arabia branded dot A320.
So Transavia is flying an Air Arabia branded Danish A320 between Greece and Paris.
Yeah, okay. Makes perfect sense.
make sense. Also, why did you send me a picture of the Aegean old 737?
So this is when we were talking about Aegean. Guys,
yeah.
Go to Aegean's Wikipedia and check the picture of the 737-400.
Yeah,
doesn't this just make you go like, this gave me such nostalgia when I saw this. Like just after...
Do you know what gives me nostalgia when I see pictures of the... When we used to fly them, every weekend, they only had 6 aircraft, okay? Is the old EasyJet 737-400s. My God, they were... The seats were gigantic in the padding. It was so padded. And Stelios was always on the flight.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a beautiful plane, isn't it? Like, when I look at it now, I'm like, oh. And I remember how many 737-400 like plane models I had. But I was going to say, to you, a retro plane... You see a 777-300 from Qatar Airways and you go, oh, that's
retro. No, I say, oh, that's a retro livery. Don't put words in my mouth. We're talking about the 73... No, when I see a 737-400, yeah, I shudder now because I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, those days are finished. So that's old.
But sweet.
Of course, where you're from, it's, you know... You're more used to these sketchy... Somebody messaged me saying in the comments about how Dan shouldn't be kind of claiming SAS as his because he's from Gothenburg. She was like, it's bra.
that's not fully true. It's actually...
Oh.
We used to have our own airline, CityLine, which was...
CityLine?
CityLine, the global Gothenburg airline that was then CityLine plagiarized... By Lufthansa.
Then now Lufthansa have City Line and City Link.
Yes, Lufthansa, they do. City. Wait. So City. I'm sorry. It wasn't City Line. It was City Airline, which is so funny because the fact
City
there was a whole airline just called City, but it's based in little Gothenburg, Sweden. They flew
and now.
Only
I'm just reading my tweet. I've got. Lufthansa City Airlines now exists. So that's not the same airline.
No, so this is just City Airline. Unfortunately, went bankrupt because, you know,
being based
in Gothenburg is not a good business model. But
I thought you convinced everyone it's the the metropolis of Scandinavia, the business and tourist global hub for transit and trade.
I just have to read this. This is the most tragic thing I've ever heard on their Wikipedia page. When City Airline put on that sad music you always play that you have like super quick at your disposal.
So you say super quick, and now I'm taking my time with it. Okay, here we go. Tell me.
Yeah. When City Airline... This is not it, but okay. What is this? Qatar Airways boarding music? Okay.
No. Here we go. There we go.
That's it. When City Airline filed for bankruptcy, it was the only airline with a hub... at Gothenburg's Landvetter Airport.
So what happened after?
Then there were no airlines with a hub at Gothenburg Landvetter Airport.
What a mess.
I know. What a tragedy.
Wait, their name was City Airline without the S, right?
Yeah, C-I-T-Y, airline.
And then, of course, in October 2023, 6 months ago, 7 months ago, Lufthansa launched City Airlines, which begins operations this summer now out of Munich and Frankfurt. Right. So now Lufthansa City, very disrespectful. So now, actually, I kind of like it. So now Lufthansa City Airlines operates alongside Lufthansa City Line, which operates alongside Lufthansa, which operates alongside all the other Lufthansa Group airlines. As long as we're all
up to speed. It all comes full circle. Watch City Airline pull up in Gothenburg, rubbing it in. And guess what? This is interesting. City Airline was established in 1997, our birth years. originally operating wet leases for BMI, British Midland Airways.
Course, BMI, who then became, well, not became, who then absorbed into British Airways.
Yeah. Full circle. So,
wow. So here we are 27 years later, and we're still doing the same thing, except BMI is BA and City Airline is DAT or BRAO, whoever.
Yeah, so now that we're back at BA, we naturally arrived back there. They are installing. So, by the way, I didn't mention before, we've completely neglected the Gatwick fleet of 777s.
Oh, yeah, the old. Yeah, the shudder worthy noise here. Yeah.
Vacation.
They make a lot of noise when they come over Final Descent here. I'm like, it's Gatwick. There it is. That's that loud, whiny, you know, passenger. I mean, aircraft.
So even tonight, I'm on a 21-year-old 777, and that's a Heathrow-based one with club suites. So BA, I mean, of course, if they're reconfiguring these ancient, you know, early 777s, of course they're refiguring their 787s, so that's nice. And that's great news for everyone. They're also reconfiguring their A380s, so all around we go from I never hated normal Club World. I found the window seats extremely private, probably the most private business class seat of its day when you raised that partition.
Yeah, and but if you were in the window, one of two windows, otherwise you had this awkward,
seats were very not great, but the windows. So yeah, I'm flying the BA A380 tomorrow.
Club World. Whoa, you got ahead of yourself there. Club World. Yeah.
Yeah, so then we get
So your flight is tomorrow. So just allocating A10
for A380.
I'm seeing boarding an A380 by bus exception because Dan on board. Submit.
We know it's going to be Seagates, right?
Yeah.
Actually, here's another question for you that might help the viewers. If you had a 4-hour transit at Heathrow, which is what I have tomorrow in Terminal 5, know your flight is leaving from the Seagates, but of course they don't assign the gate until an hour and I don't know what it is for an A380, but not much before. What would you do? What lounge would you go to? Where would you hang around? This is a morning
Concord room, Habibi.
Okay, let's bring it back down to earth. If you're at least a humble human in business, or if you're in economy, what would you do?
Do I have my status or not? Do I have my platinum, emerald?
No, you have one. Let's just assume you're flying business, no status. And let's do the scenario if you were in economy as well.
Okay, so if I was in business with no state, with no status, then I would just go to the galleries lounge and chill
out. Which one?
Watch some Netflix.
South. That's what I was thinking. Maybe it's less crowded.
No, I would say, hold on. You said 4 hours. Let me answer the question. Right. So I would go to Galleries South and start off there, okay, and have an hour and a half in there, and then I would
maybe after an overnight flight. They're not clean.
Anyway, so then I would leave and go to the B gates, and that lounge is always quiet and has a lot of natural daylight, which is very nice. And I would spend some time in there. And then by then, 3 hours will have passed and boarding opens an hour before, so you kind of get ready to go. So it's not that long. So I would do that. If I was in economy with no lounge access, either I would pay for the lounge. There is a couple of lounge options that you can pay for at Terminal 5. But let's assume that that was not going to be the case. Then I would...
cry.
What time do you arrive?
Even before 6 a.m. So I'm one of the treasured pre-6 a.m. arrivals.
They're very, very elite. Then I would go to Pret a Manger for breakfast, go to Wagamama for lunch. I'd do it all that way. Terminal 5, do a bit of shopping or window shopping or whatever. Terminal 5 is pleasant in that scenario, especially when it's not summer holidays or Easter break and so on. It can be pleasant. And I love the amount of natural daylight, especially for a country in the UK that's just stuck under a grey dome. Even in Terminal 5, it's bright. So, it's a decent place to transit. You're going to be fine. You're going to enjoy
it. What I would do in economy, I have to say, I'm thinking of doing it tomorrow because I do enjoy Wagamama now and then. It opens at 6 a.m. and it's actually not a bad place to sit. I don't think they'll kick you out.
And they do a good breakfast, by the way.
Yeah,
they do
like a good breakfast. It's not too crazy. You can sit with a view looking out, like table by the window, and just... Yeah. Yeah,
I would much rather eat in Wagamama, right, where they're making the food to order and they've got an open kitchen and you can see everything, whatever, than some, you know, buffet lounge food that has been sat there for hours under a hot lamp and had hundreds of passengers who are connecting from all over the world, breathing and coughing over it. And, you know, that's...
felt that? When I was at the Galleries Lounge at Gatwick last summer, I don't know when you were last there, but it was, first of all, it was summer. So the whole airport was a zoo, but the Galleries Lounge, the food was incredible, but the amount of people, like the line to get food, the way people were dealing with the utensils, picking things up here and there with their hands, like sandwiches.
Forget it. Yeah. Stop trying to trigger me again. Okay, listen, let's go to Q&A. Moritz asks, hey, Alex, right at this moment, I'm at Munich and I have been standing in a bus waiting for people for 20 minutes now. If you were the CEO of an airline, how would you decide? A, having on-time people leave on time by leaving late people behind, or B, making on-time people wait and then all being late to depart?
But is this on time to boarding or on time as in departure?
So I think he means that they are now going to be late because they are waiting for passengers.
Yeah.
So in order to not depart late, he's suggesting, would I take the decision to let the aircraft go half empty or let the aircraft go full, but we depart late?
Do you want my take on this?
Yeah.
You're like, I don't care, but fine. So... All right, I will say, if I was an airline, I would also, of course, the most sensible thing is to have as few buses as possible. I would have separate business class buses, but I would have as few buses as possible and, you know, unfortunately make the last bus have to wait. What I do as a passenger in that situation is I also wait. So if I know I'm going to be on the last bus or one of the last buses, I will sit in the gate and wait until I will. Actually, sometimes I tell them I'm going to wait here and tell me when the bus is leaving and I'll come on board. So you spend minimal time on the bus. You get a spot right by the door because you're the last to get on board. So you end up being the first person to get off the bus. So that's my trick.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, that's...
I would, obviously, if I was an airline CEO, revenue is, you know, very, very important. I would, unfortunately, have to be on the side of having to wait for these passengers, especially if you're waiting for connecting passengers, because it can be very costly to then have to rebook them and so on. So I understand why airlines do that. I don't love it when you're flying point to point, for example, with a low-cost carrier, and you're waiting for people that just couldn't time manage themselves because they were drinking or something like that.
Yeah.
In those scenarios, I'm like, close these doors, let us go. They can deal with it later.
But I think it's great. I think it's great that Ryanair is so strict that they're like, if you're not here, it's not happening. Because then you know you're not going to be waiting for people. It's just going to happen. It works. You're on time much more often. If you're not flying in the evening, then you're screwed. But... you know, earlier in the day, it's good.
The second question I have, well, I've got a few comments. One, Christopher says, well done on the podcast. It's now a must listen. Thank you, Christopher. That's very nice. Andrew was responding to my Instagram story where I showed all of the dozens of grounded aircraft, Thai Airways aircraft at Bangkok. It looks like an aircraft boneyard. It's amazing. I know you've posted it as well before when you've arrived. I had
story,
a really great, I think when I sent it to you, you said to me that the view was great. And you said, wow, look, how lucky did you get with that view?
I did.
Yeah, well, yeah. So don't be salty. Anyway, he said, oh, look, there's a ready-made, Andrew says, there's your ready-made airline fleet there waiting for you to become the CEO. Nice thought, Andrew, but I'm not taking neglected aircraft. So This question is from Furkan Ahmed. He says, "Hi, Alex. Huge fan of yours and your podcast. I sometimes also enjoy the quips of your guest host, Dan."
Okay, either he's in on the joke.
I'm sending this to you right now on WhatsApp, okay? Dan, I'm reading this for the first ever time.
Okay, go ahead.
Right, hold on. I've just sent it to you, okay? So, he says, "Huge fan of yours and your podcast. I sometimes also enjoy the quips of your guest host, Dan. I really do know far too much unnecessary information about Gothenburg. Hopefully it comes in handy one day in a random 30-second game." He says, "So I'm currently watching a review of a Qantas seasonal scheduled service from Brisbane to Antarctica. This is marketed as a leisure sightseeing flight, which I think is absolutely brilliant. Chomping at the bit to learn more of this flight so I can take it myself one day. My question is, are there any other other notable scheduled routes offered by airlines that are similar? That is, sightseeing flights only where you land at your point of origin for the purpose of admiring a location and scenery, but without actually disembarking there." And he says, "Keep up the great work on the podcast and I look forward to Wednesdays because of it." So, sightseeing flights, I think they're great and I love it when airlines go to the effort of thinking outside the box and letting people enjoy Earth's natural wonders through the magic of air travel. So I'm all for it. I wonder where we could see more of it, because off the top of my head, apart from the Antarctica flights, I mean, in terms of a commercial flight that returns to its point of origin purely for the purpose of sightseeing, and I'm talking about on a smaller scale, don't come with me with island hopping examples. I'm talking about on a significant scale, the commercial airline. What examples can you think of?
Around the Maldives, yeah. For example. That's like...
No, but that's what I wanted to leave out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. First of all, in much of Europe, that wouldn't work, because the amount of flight shaming would be like, wait, you're getting on a flight to nowhere? So I don't think that would be acceptable, but I can't think of many places, to be honest. So,
yeah. The Eclipse had some special flights, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So stuff like that. Special events, you know, the Apocalypse, for example. That could be a good one. So I have a question here from Millie, speaking of the Apocalypse. Millie asks, she says, "Hi, Dan, my husband and I really enjoy your YouTube channel and podcast with Alex. Keep up the great work informing us about the airline industry. I was wondering what your and Alex's take are on the safest seats on an airplane." What do we think? So she says, she asks a bit more, but basically, I know the answer to this.
Yeah, so do I.
So do you want to take it?
Well, see, okay, statistically, that's how you answer these questions, right? So it's just based on statistics. Statistically, it's the rear section of the aircraft.
Yes, but isn't it specifically the rear section over the wing?
Well, again, depends on the statistic. Some statistics show that it's just the rear section, just basically as further back as possible. Others say that because of the kind of the way in which things solidify structurally with the wings, you know, over the area of the wings, that is also a safe place, but then that's cancelled out by the fact that fuel is stored in the wings. So it depends how you look at it. Yeah. I would say that I don't think people should be factoring it into decision making, because aircraft and civil aviation is incredibly sophisticated, and therefore you should feel comfortable sitting anywhere, and if your pilot has cleared you for takeoff, then it means it's safe to do so.
Yeah, that is an interesting sort of dilemma, because what we're saying is the first and business class are the most dangerous places to sit. So,
well, that's the headline. That's the Daily Mail headline. Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's that. That's the title of this episode.
No, it's not.
No, but so the thing is, like, at the same time, one of the number one things I find helps people, like when people message me saying they're scared of flying, and then they say, "I flew business class for the first time, and it was life-changing because I felt I don't know what it is, because I can't relate, but it's like something about having a bed or having all that space that made many people
it
feel
takes
more
them
safe.
Out of, you're right, it's familiarity. It feels more like home, feels more like a bedroom, feels, of course. You
know? Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And especially the novelty, I guess, the first times you're flying business class, you kind of forget that you're sitting in the same type of thing you are in economy. So that's interesting. I mean, I don't think about where I sit in from a safety perspective.
Well, you got asked today. Somebody asked you today, why do you always choose the rear of business class?
That's true. In my Q&A, I can answer it here. I'm going to make a reel about it, but it has nothing to do with safety. I just always sit in the last row for another thing that Alex and I both love, privacy. Because if you're not in something like Q Suite, even in Q Suite, I like sitting in the last row, but I love standing up and there's no one staring at me, because I find that especially on European airlines, people are so stary. In Sweden, people will stare so unashamedly at you. So when you're in the back,
Europeans, Europe, like in Europe, is kind of stare. That's what I love about South Korea. Isn't it amazing how everybody keeps themselves to themselves? Nobody looks.
Exactly.
It's just like,
and you also don't feel, the thing is, like, for us, since we're not part of their culture, we don't feel judged, because like, we don't have the same expectations on us. While maybe when you're part of a European culture, you can feel more that way. So anyway, I like it for that reason. You don't have people staring at you. I also like it because when I'm filming, people don't see me constantly recording the seat or doing this and that.
Yeah.
Because it's more in the back. And I love a good mini cabin. I love when, like on the Qatar, the regular A350-1000 and the A350-900, where, so not the one you flew to Seoul with fewer seats, but
that
those have like one or two rows of business that's just on its
two
own.
Rows.
I love sitting there because it's so, Q Suite is already private, but once you're there, it's like, wow, you're good.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And there's very minimal kind of passing through the cabins by the cabin crew. So it's especially because of the, especially if it's the A350-1000. So they have a bit more of a proper galley there, like doors too. I think the crew find it a bit of a challenge. For example, on the high density A350 that I flew to Seoul to deliver all of the business class cabin between doors one and two, solely by, it's not between doors one and two. Economy is in front of door two.
Yeah.
Okay, ignore that. Yeah. But anyway, I think they find it a challenge on the A350 forward galley, which is just so much smaller than the 777 galley.
To only have one, I guess. And that's the same problem
so
British
cramped.
Airways has on their A350.
It is, but British Airways were warned. They were warned by, Airbus told them, this is not going to work for you to deliver a premium service by having everything come out of that small forward galley. And they ignored it, and now they're suffering, and now they're trying to figure out how to reconfigure.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. So, I have another question here from Jan. He asks, just love the podcast. Here's a question. Have you or Alex ever found anything odd or strange in airline catering? So, for example, he sent an article here where someone found a dead moth in their food.
Oh, God. I found
you
some
barely eat on
horrendous,
planes, so let alone
I found some pretty horrendous looking food. If that counts as like odd or weird, but no, I know what you mean. Sometimes these things go viral. Thankfully, no.
Well, I have. No. I don't think I texted you, but I was in American Airlines first class on their 777 out of
Heathrow. Economy for once.
Oh yeah, okay, let's play the relatability game. So yeah, I was in first class from Heathrow to New York, and there was a live, pretty sure it was a tick
oh no,
in the fruit salad, crawling around.
Can't have been a tick, maybe a fruit fly. Don't exaggerate.
No, it didn't have wings. I swear, it had that. It looked like
kind of shell.
Yeah, the circular shell, exactly.
Oh, no.
So I was
that's horrible.
What? In a first-class meal, no less. Not that American Airlines
first-class catering. I can't eat figs for a similar reason, because my mum cut open a fig and inside was a maggot. Now, I know these things happen, and a maggot is basically a baby fly or whatever, but like...
No, but you know that every single fig only exists because it was pollinated by, I think it's a bee or some flying insect that sacrifices itself and becomes ensconced in the fig. So every single fig technically has a dead bug in it, because that's how they're, yeah, that's how they need to be produced or whatever.
I mean, you come for the aviation chat, you stay for the fig intel. I had no idea.
Yeah.
No wonder we're in the, no wonder we're in the top 5% globally.
You learn everything here. So, okay, just...
You do.
We've been going for so long, but we have so many questions. I just want to ask one more here from...
Go on.
Which do we choose? I'm sorry, guys. I feel so bad that we
can't... I quickly update you quickly? You know, do you remember Olivier was asking if he should pay double Ryanair or Air France to pay double? He said that it was... Ryanair was £50 and Air France was £100.
Oh, 100%.
And he says, thanks for answering my question so quickly. So Air France, yeah.
Did he choose Air France?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll ask him. Or he can get in touch after he listens to this.
All right, so final question here from Skanda for today. Hi, Alex and Dan. I love the podcast and look forward to it every week. He has two questions. I think today we can only do the first one because it could take a long time. But his first question is, what are our preferences when it comes to model airplanes? Would be interesting to hear our thoughts on various brands and scales.
So I text you while I was in Bangkok asking you, do you know where the model aircraft shop is, the famous one? And you didn't know anything about it.
No, I haven't been model aircraft
shop. Well, I found it.
Oh, yeah? And?
Yeah. Amazing, beautiful, stunning.
Tremendous.
But they didn't... beautiful store. But they didn't have what I was looking for, so I didn't actually purchase.
Which
they had a
what?
Lot of... thankfully, already what I already have. So they had all the A380s of Singapore and Etihad and Qatar and BA. And, you know, they had a nice 351,000 from Japan Airlines, which was nice and current.
But
so I liked that.
But you were looking for...
I was looking for something specific.
A320.
No. No, I was looking for anything but that. Okay? I was looking for an Olympic Air aircraft.
Oh.
Greece's former national carrier, the Pan Am of Greece. And they didn't have any. But I spent a lot of time in this store. And the stuff in there was beautiful. The collection was amazing. But it was nothing... there wasn't anything too special in there that warranted a purchase.
Yeah.
But I'm like you. We do collect models. I'm sitting right with one on my desk right now. I have a significant collection that I've built up since 6 years old. So, yeah. I'm a fan.
So, first of all, the other day in Dubai, I saw a Riyadh Air 787. So, I was like, okay, we're getting there.
The purple livery.
Yes.
The lavender
the
livery.
The only thing. Yeah. So, this reminds me of when I was in Doha last time. And we were in Sukhwaqif. And there were some airplane stores. And, of course, all AV geeks start getting completely OCD when a model is incorrect. So, the thing is, this one was perfect. It was completely accurate. Correct proportions. Only problem, it was a 787-8 and not a 9. And I was like, no, this is cannot. Which obviously Riyadh Air has not ordered. So that was the
thing. We need Riyadh Air models. That would be lovely. We need Riyadh Air models.
If Riyadh Air is listening.
I didn't want to be as obvious as that, but you just were.
I'm joking. Obviously, I don't know how that would even work, but. I will say, when I was a kid, I only collected one 500 or one 400 scale models because they made good toys. But because I would fly around the house, just take the plane, like BA 747, walking all around the house, making the announcements, all that good stuff. But now that I'm older, I appreciate a good one 200 scale model because those are more decorative. And it's
desk
kind of
worthy.
If you know, putting a 1/500 scale model on a desk just looks kind of like okay.
I bought a nice Kuwait A320neo
in 1/200 scale.
Yeah,
that's a little random. Like that's a bit of a random model, Alex. Not gonna lie.
No, I think. I think Kuwait is anything but random. I think it's because you haven't spent enough time there to appreciate the beauty of.
I'm not talking about Kuwait as a country. I'm talking about the.
I'm just trying to get Kuwaitis to start on you. That's what I know. Okay,
and the fact that it's not even a like a A330 Neo, which would be cool, but it's an A320.
Delivery looks great. I'm looking at it right now and I'm thinking, you don't know what you're missing.
It does.
This is illuminating my coffee table. Well, look, with that, it's been a pleasure as always. I wish you safe onward travels, of course, as you begin the next part of your adventure from Nairobi to London to, did you say Miami?
Yeah, I'm going all over. Guys.
Oh my God.
Follow my Instagram stories. That's where you'll see the live movements.
We'll be following, and we shall regroup and reconvene this time next week.
Yes, that will be, we can't wait for it. As always, toodaloo, and see you next week on air.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.